This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody.
Pumelele's here. See us here, only just by the skin of his teeth.
With dry skin.
Oh, shame, Sia. Yeah,
dry skin of your teeth.
You don't look, you look like matte Sia. As opposed to gloss Sia.
The lips are good.
And Pinky's here also. We'll take your calls. 0861-555-189. Whatever's on your mind, let's hear from you. It's Thursday morning, which means, among other things, the burning platform, but we'll get to that later on.
Gareth, excuse me. I've been thinking about for a whole week. I saw it on Facebook, that thing with the, do you remember Body Beat?
Body Beak, yes. That guy who, this was this terrible show they used to have on South African television called Good Morning SA.
So all I've wanted to say for an entire week was, Good morning, South Africa.
Is that how they used to greet people?
Yes, it was pathetic. It was the most horrible show.
Why did you have to break down?
That's why there was Vuyombuli.
Yeah.
There was, Good morning, South Africa.
Oh my God.
And they had this guy who, this man who wore spandex and leg warmers, and he had big frizzy hair, and he used to do morning aerobics.
And because here's my ultimate Mondegreen, right? My ultimate Mondegreen is, I still don't know what it is that they used to say, but it was like the cue that my transport was coming. And I used to think that it went, hit the body beat, boy. Hit the body beat, boy.
Yeah, it's just one of those.
I don't know what they were saying. I still don't know what they're saying.
It's like an 80s song about, you know, almost like
Olivia. Body beat.
That's right. And it was almost like Olivia Newton-John's, let's get physical.
I am so grateful I was born in the mid-90s.
Yes, the 80s were goddamned embarrassing.
Wowzers.
Yeah, it was. So, like, there were two things. At 10 to 7.
You still remember the time?
Yeah, dude. It was like, it was my morning routine, guy. It was my morning routine. Yeah.
Yes.
At 10 to 7, they had Laurel and Hardy.
A cartoon.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Laurel and Hardy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then,
I don't remember that, but well,
like,
done.
At like 5 to 7, it was Body Beat. At 5 to 6 or something, it was like Body Beat, Body Beat.
Yeah, because it was really
early.
And
it was like a 5-minute exercise, like, now, to now get your body moving.
And here's the funny thing, is like housewives all over South Africa. Oh my God, it's almost Body Beat time. They'd get ready for their little bit of Body Beat.
I'm trying to imagine all of this.
People actually thought that 5 minutes or whatever it was of aerobics in the morning. And we're talking like, if you watch a music video, if you watch Flashdance, you get an idea of what we're talking about. It's the cheesiest.
Yeah, if you watch like Footloose.
Yes, Kenny Loggins.
It was that kind of.
Right.
And Kevin Bacon. It was that kind of experience.
It's just unbelievable. And people loved it. They got into it. It was a big thing. And, you know, we were so naive and like a little bit childish in the 80s compared to how we are now. We're so cynical now about,
like,
comparison,
people,
you know.
Like, Kanego can't understand when I say to him that, first of all, between my sister, my brother and I, and my parents, there was one TV in one room.
Yeah.
And then,
and you all had to sit together and watch it.
And we all had to decide what we were going to watch until my dad came home, and then there was time for the news.
Right.
But there was, if you were lucky and you had Mnet, you had 2 hours of KTV. Otherwise, which is why I still remember when Laurel and Hardy came on.
Yeah.
You literally had like 45 minutes of cartoons.
You soaked that sucker up.
It was like Laurel and Hardy in the morning.
This will get us going.
Damn it. And if that transport came early to pick you up and you missed your Laurel and Hardy.
Oh.
It spoiled your day. Well, I remember that there were a lot of activities we used to do in those days that were based on, like, everybody doing it together, you know? Everybody doing the same thing. Everybody kind of, okay, now we're going to dance. So everyone would dance.
Oh, my goodness.
And then everybody would stand up, and then they'd make you do really dumb stuff, and people would do it because it was the 80s and they didn't know better.
Well, you didn't know anything else.
And also, we couldn't tailor entertainment to make it work for us. You remember, Pumi?
Yeah,
you couldn't make things. You know, like, there weren't a whole lot of choices at that time in the morning.
You couldn't skip over the ads.
There was one TV channel. There was one show in the mornings. All the other channels were dead in the mornings. There was nothing going on.
They actually had, like, there's that clock. with the color bars.
Yes.
Like color bars and the time.
The test pattern.
And you waited for it to like tick over to 0600 and then it would be good morning, South Africa.
Did it start at 7 or did it start at 6?
It started at 6, guy. I would know this. Why? Because from 6 to 7 was me getting ready for school. From like, yeah, from about 5:30 and then...
I'm imagining little Pumi getting dressed at the mirror with this playing.
Yep.
Oh, wow. All right,
it is so interesting. Well, this is my take on yesteryear. I think, I think of how...
Fasia, this is ancient history.
It really was.
He wasn't there.
80s was just too far away for me. I think of how we were, you know, we were going through what we were going through in the country, and there was so much that we were cut off from, but how big our influences were. So, for example, how big our American influences were. And this is why I say this. I was watching, somehow I got stuck in this YouTube rabbit hole and ended up watching Mayu von Chaka Chaka's music video.
Which one?
The one with Sinyaka.
Oh, no, I was watching, what's the one with the fire engine? I'm Burning Up.
Yes, yes.
And then I was also watching Thank You, Mr. DJ.
That's the one with Sinyaka.
Was Sinyaka the DJ. And the DJ part, because in the music video, she calls into the studio and the DJ's there. And it struck me that
the DJ was
Yeah, you know, he was speaking in an American accent.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, hold up now.
Listen, this was a big thing. These were the days.
Ooh.
Listen to the sirens. My voice. Listen to that synth sound.
Yeah. Boom, 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 boom.
And the outfits, my God. All right, I want to hear what Sia thinks now, because he wasn't there. So the 80s were probably the most awful fashion of all time. Shoulder pads.
Leg warmers. In South African heat.
Yeah.
These colors that were just clashing.
And there
were
neon
these
harem pads. Which have sort of made a comeback.
The MC Hammer pants.
Harem pants. Yeah.
The ones that make you look like you've just delivered a baby in them.
Yeah.
I'm burning up.
Hey.
I'm burning up. My heart's on fire.
Oh. And then she...
And then the fire engine comes.
In the video, she calls the fire engine because she's burning up inside.
That was very literal, the 80s.
I'm trying to remember her monologue.
No, very literal, the 80s. Has much changed? Have you seen rap videos lately?
No, you're right.
People are money in the club.
Yeah.
And guess what? They're throwing money in the club. Come
on. This video, she goes, help, help. Someone help. I'm burning up inside.
Yeah, if you feel like laughing today when you get to the office, just go to YouTube and watch like the original Burning Up music video. It's hilarious.
And I'm in love with the DJ. She goes, he's always there for me when I'm feeling down and alone. I feel like I need to send in my dedication.
Yeah, I feel like people need to see your face right now.
Hang on, let me actually play it, because this is worth playing. I mean, this is hilarious. Now she's with one of those old phones that you turn the dial. Listen up. How 80s is that? And it rings?
Yes.
I guess that's why they played the song so much, because every DJ thought, well, she's in love with me. Let me play the song. She's in love with me. And it was my very, very best song. And this was my very best DJ.
It's like somewhere in the middle of the video.
And it's that phone with the dial. That phone that you like dial it up and it was...
And it would roll back.
It's raining in the city.
Yes.
I've got nowhere to go. I have no one to talk to. Except the voice on the radio.
Shut up, Sia. Don't laugh at us.
Yeah, this is my main one. I picture him in my mind.
Got this bow in her hair.
Yes, yes. Yes, I'm in love.
Oh yes, babies. Oh yes, babies.
I want to get to the part where she,
Rainbow Station KMOD FM 95.
By the way, this is Bob Mabena, huh?
Is it Bob Mabena? Bob Mabena has lived.
No, here's his voice.
It's gonna be coming down all night. I hope you're warm and tight, honey. If you're feeling alone, baby, just get on the phone and talk to me. Just get on the phone.
But you got to also remember, DJs were that cheesy.
But so that way of delivering voice, I listened to a podcast the other day, and the Black Station that started it, you know, the Quiet Storm is what they called it. And they actually started the trend of lacing those kind of like smooth velvety.
Hey, baby.
And
if you're all
and
alone.
Coined the, because back then it was called race music, R&B.
Race music.
Race music.
Wow.
Race music is what R&B was called.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't like on mainstream radio. And these guys, I mean, this was such a hectic. This podcast is called Without Fail, and the guy that bought a small radio station to play R&B and jazz in stereo in New York City, and then syndicated the whole thing throughout the US, and that's.
When that was how people sounded though on the radio.
That's how they mainstreamed R&B, and that's those like deep voices.
And somehow we sitting comfortably in South Africa were quoting Wichita, Kansas.
Of course, because where else were you listening to that kind of music? We had no urban radio stations. There was no Radio Metro as it was called when it first came out. I mean, Radio Metro is a very new experience. There was only Ukhozi, which was called Radio Zulu back then.
Radio Zulu.
I'm telling you, like, it's a thing. And it was all, like, decided upon by the apartheid government what people could play. Yeah. So, like, there was lots of music that people were playing.
There were different radio stations for different language groups, and then so for example, there was Radio Zulu, there was Radio Tswana, and then you had English radio, which was SAFM. Mm. Remember that you didn't have independent stations at that point.
SRECAR, baby.
And they were outside of the country. There were ones that broadcast into the country, but it was very difficult.
Like Bop?
Bop was from Tswana.
Yeah.
And that was also quite new.
LM, so, which came out of Mozambique, and there was Capital, which came out of Transkei.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was just my guess.
Radio.
It was very odd.
People actually had transistors. Like, that's how people caught.
What is a transistor?
Do you remember those big batteries, Pumi? Jesus, we're old.
Oh holy about.
Jesus, we're old. Remember those big batteries?
With the connecting things.
Yeah, you'd have wires and connecting.
You have lost me at transistors.
Sia, just be grateful for that cell phone in your hand.
Yeah.
Be grateful for the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Be grateful for YouTube.
I think I only experienced probably, give or take, like 6 months of my life with just even having the aerial on the TV. I remember as the youngest in the family, I had to be the one who always...
Rabbit ears.
Yeah, I had to like jump up and move them around if the screen wasn't showing properly. Or then before remotes, I had to jump up and change channels.
So let's
That's
just,
the worst
let's
I've look experienced.
At, let's fast forward now to where we are, because Twitter turned 10 in February.
Yeah.
Facebook turned 15. This is not a long time.
So if you think about the level of technological advancement... in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
As opposed to the technological advancements we had 50 years before that.
Right. Or even over the period of 50 years, you know? It's much slower than it is now. It's crazy.
It's amazing.
Mm.
It is amazing. There are people who are alive today who had no phones, who now, like...
There are people alive today who lived at a time where there were no airplanes at all. Like, they're very old people now. They're over 100 years old because the plane was first flown in the early 1900s. But there are people who were alive when there was not a way to fly.
And now they're seeing the advent of
they've seen people land on the moon. They've seen the invention of the cell phone. They're seeing Elon Musk send his SpaceX rockets up. And you've got to listen, this SpaceX is an amazing company. If you've ever got time, get on the internet and do some research around what SpaceX are really doing. It's unbelievable. Like, this is really the future of, first of all, humanity. Second of all business is going to go this. It's just phenomenal.
Elon Musk from Kempton Park,
Pretoria.
Pretoria, is from Pretoria.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous like that.
But you see Kempton this, Park. I mean, he grew up with all this shit that Pumi and I are talking about too, right? So he probably knows. Yeah. It's amazing. And this is why I always say, and it sounds like such a trope that gets trotted out, but it wasn't when I started saying this 8 years ago, that this is the best time to be alive. People would say to me, oh no, it isn't. There's so much trouble, the world economic crisis. Do you remember all of that had happened?
Guys.
People were like, oh, but the global financial crisis and the world's a mess. And
well, people didn't think they'd survive Y2K.
Yeah. That was a little bit sooner, but yeah. A little bit earlier. But it is amazing. And you take stock of this stuff. Like, Pumi can pick up the phone now and she can phone her mother.
And see her.
And before, you would have a landline. If you were lucky.
No, so before, there was one house in the whole street
that had a phone.
And people would phone and say, I need to speak to so-and-so. And then you put the phone down and they will phone back in 5 minutes because
they'd run up the road
across to go fetch so-and-so and the phone and
drink. Did you charge for that?
You know,
niceness doesn't pay my telephone bill.
It wasn't even about niceness. You know, there was a time when we actually genuinely cared about each other.
Hard to think, huh?
And you know what we didn't care about so much is we truly didn't care about what you're posting on Instagram to make other people feel less with what they didn't have.
Mm-hmm. There was a time.
There was a time, not so long ago.
Yesteryear.
Not so long ago, Sia. Not so long ago.
I mean, I'm all alone.
Yeah. Lubabalo says, Godwa, guys, the 80s were the best. I think I would have loved living in those years. But Lubabalo, you're about as young as Sia, so...
What would you have loved about it, Lubabalo? What is it that you see today that you look back and go, oh dear, I wish I had that jacket with those shoulder pads. Yeah, look how close my shoulders would be to my ears.
Having lived through it, Pumi and I can assure you this, you didn't miss very much. I'd been quite happy to have been born 20 years later. Michelle says, those crap catcher pants, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that show called No Jacket Required, says
Sean? Yes, yes.
What is that?
So I
NJR
loved. I love TV now, but I loved TV.
Well, it was the sexiest thing in the world once.
It was a whole other world. Like, total geek, right? I loved TV. I watched everything, all the pop culture that you just kind of like took in, all the stuff that it was. TV was amazing. You got to see into other people's lives in a way like you couldn't. The Huxtables, before we knew all about Bill
and what a creep he was. We used to love the perfect family. We loved Bill Cosby in those days.
I used to think Hillman College from A Different World is an actual real place.
Do you remember Different Strokes? Speaking of different.
What you talking about,
Willis?
Oh.
All right, so No Jacket Required, says Sean. It was a music show on TV1. There's TV 1.
2 and 3.
TV 1, TV 2, TV 3. See, yeah? That's all we had.
It didn't even have a name. It was just 1, 2, TV and 3. One.
And they didn't have any particular... Like, as I recall...
Miss
that,
me.
For me, there wasn't a specific like program lineup for TV 1 that made it different to 2 or 3. They were all kind of the same.
Yeah, no, so the one had English, and I don't know English and Afrikaans, but like a minimal amount of Afrikaans. And then TV 2 had Zulu, Nguni languages, mm-hmm. and y'all had Touche, right? And then TV 3 had Sotho and Tswana. Sotho, Tswana,
really?
And Pedi.
Because I remember.
Because yeah, Gareth, were y'all watching? Y'all weren't watching Mupeme at your house, so y'all.
No, but we used to watch. Do you remember they used to dub a whole lot of shows like Spider Man, Rabubi?
Yeah.
So we would watch Rabubi on whichever channel. I didn't care what it was on or what the language was.
You were just there for the colors.
And
it's the reason why K2 in the SABC was, for a very long time, one of the world's most amazing recording facilities, because everything was dubbed. Everything was, and you had to tune into Radio 2000 if you wanted to listen to the original soundtrack.
So
because it was all dubbed into Afrikaans. So you'd be watching Alf, right? And then Alf would be Orkney Snorkney. Yeah. And then if you wanted to hear the English version of it,
you'd have to tune in on the radio,
and then you have to align your radio signal and your TV
this was like world class technology at the time, right?
You know, next time my Netflix buffers and I just have that faint white circle for 4 seconds.
Wow.
I need to sit and go, well,
there was also a walking, talking shark cartoon on Good Morning South Africa called Grootbek.
Yes.
Grootbek.
Yeah.
Big Mouth.
Yeah, Big Mouth.
The shark called Big Mouth. Okay.
Yeah.
Sharky.
Hey, guys.
George.
Re Bill Cosby. You guys are chatting. Re General Butt Naked from Liberia. He loves Bill. Because Kids Say the Darndest Things. Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. Kids Say the Darndest Things was another thing Bill Cosby did.
Oh, right.
People liked him. He was
Which was actually a BBC original.
That's right.
They made
into an American show.
Into an American show with Bill Cosby.
Sure. Wow. Die Man van Staal.
Y'all.
Says somebody else.
You see, which was dubbed because it was Million Dollar Man.
Yes, that's right.
And then it was dubbed into Afrikaans.
So did it all land? Did it all?
Oh yeah, people. Listen, people. Dude, there wasn't a lot.
Were the jokes the same?
There was no option, Baba.
There were no options, so you couldn't. What are you going to watch?
What are you going
to
do?
I mean, we used to get home in the afternoons from school, and I would be so excited on a certain day of the week because it would be like the cartoon I loved. You know, there'd be some. Like, what was it? Thundercats or... You remember that stuff?
He-Man!
Yeah, I would be so excited about He-Man.
And She-Ra!
Yeah. And then it would be... A whole week I'd have to wait. I'd never wished away so much of my life as I did in those years when I was like, oh, God, I've got to wait a week for the next cartoon. It's a big deal. All right, let's get into some news. You ready?
Sure. My goodness.
All right, there's a lot of news. So, All right. Where should we begin? Well, let's start with Zwane. He's disappeared off our radar for a little while, but he hasn't gone away completely. The State Capture Commission has heard that former Mineral Resources Minister Mosbenzi Zwane flew to Switzerland to do the bidding of the Gupta family to take over the Optimum coal mine. These guys had such power, huh? And we're only finding out now just how they could click their fingers and ministers would jump.
Yeah. Yo.
It's just unbelievable. Former CEO of Glencore, Clinton Efron, took the stand at the commission in Parktown on Wednesday. He described events suggesting that former CEO of Eskom, Brian Molefe, used his powers to force Optimum Coal Mine out of business so that the Gupta family could swoop in and buy the company. It's just criminal. Criminal. By the way, when are we going to get Brian Molefe to cry in front of this commission? Ooh. Like he cried when he went on TV the last time. Zwane denied more than once that he flew to Switzerland to pressure Glencore to sell to Optimum Coal Mine to the Gupta family. But it turns out that he did go to Zurich with the Guptas to facilitate the sale of the mine to their family. The meeting between Mr. Zwane and Glazenberg took place at the Dolder Hotel in Zurich, where he asked who Mr. Esser was. He was told that he was an advisor to the minister. Yo, this thing is, it goes deep. Glazenberg had clearly told the minister that we were keeping the mine, but we were willing to consider a sale at an appropriate price. He then says, Zwane told Glazenberg, quote, I'm sure Glencore will reach a deal with the Guptas.
Mm.
Yo, talk about being someone's puppet. It's just unreal. Ramaphosa, in other news, Cyril Ramaphosa, the president, says it's important for the ANC to address challenges facing the party in an open and transparent manner. This is because the ANC has been racked with new rape and sexual harassment allegations. Zizi Kodwa and Pule Mabe have both been in the news in the last little while. And the president says it's important to allow processes to deal with the issue. Well, I think that's a sensible point of view. I don't think we can criticize that too much. A lot of people jumping to conclusions, saying, well, we've got to believe the victims. But actually, what we need to do is do a proper, thorough investigation. And that investigation has to be independent. Because the political parties aren't going to do a good job of it.
Mm.
They're going to protect their own, as we've seen them do from time to time. Kodwa and Pule Mabe, who have both been accused of sexually harassing women, have voluntarily stepped aside pending investigations. And I think that's a good move. Mm-hmm. Because if they just stayed in their jobs, like so many people do when they're caught with their finger in the till or their pants down.
Stop with the analogies.
You know what I mean.
I was cringing. As you said, finger in the... I was just like, Gareth.
Yeah. You know what I mean.
I know it's unradio, but...
You're lucky I went for till, aren't you? They are both waiting for the ANC to come to some decisions. On the sidelines of the ANC campaigning in Khayelitsha, the president said investigations into the matter should be allowed to run their course, regardless of how difficult it might be for the party. He also said, as part of the ANC's renewal process, it's important that all issues be tackled head on. And then everybody's favorite story of this week, Alleluia Ministries.
Oh, man.
Defends the pastor after the miracle resurrection. Well, what are they going to do? They're making good money. They got to stick to their guns, right?
Alleluia Ministries, Kings and Queens something, Black Phoenix. Those are all the companies both involved.
Kings and Queens Real Funerals.
That's
so it. So Alleluia International Ministries has moved to defend Pastor Elf Lukau after the so-called miracle resurrection in Sandton on Sunday. A video showing him praying over a supposedly dead man who then rises from the coffin continues to be shared widely online. You imagine?
It made it to BBC, hey?
I was just about to say, you know how, because we laugh about these pastors who heal in America. And, you know, you see those people and they're pretending to be in a wheelchair or whatever and they can't walk. And then they suddenly get up and walk. And we know they're actors who are paid. And we watch this on American TV and we go, how could people be so gullible? Well, we must be careful because now we're the ones being shown on international media to be so gullible. Mm. The church has slammed claims that Lukau resurrected a dead man, highlighting that the coffin was actually moving when it arrived on the church premises.
Says, all I want to know is why is that man's mouth open like that?
Yeah, when he's supposedly dead.
Like, what?
Well, he has to breathe. Maybe he's got nasal problems.
Like, why is his mouth open? That's, hey, guys. Hey,
so the church has moved to defend him, saying he did acknowledge during the so-called resurrection the man in the coffin was in fact breathing. Oh, please.
How?
It says the pastor declared the resurrection should be verified by interviewing the deceased's doctor and the mortuary. Well, I can promise you they're going to find no death certificate. They're going to find no one at the mortuary who's willing to testify that he was dead because he never went to the mortuary.
You know, I have so many questions. There are just so many questions.
Give us a few of those questions.
Like, why?
The pain on your face.
Why was this cottage, right? Not on its way to the cemetery. Why did they do a detour to the church? Because I understand it wasn't like this was a funeral service. This was not a funeral service at the church.
Oh, right.
So why this hearse and, you know, and Gareth, you know, we were just talking about funerals. Like our funerals, black people funerals have lots of people in a convoy. It's the hearse, it's the family car, it's at least two family cars, because like there's lots of crying family. There's there's all of the people that came to the funeral. And
which could be anybody, because everyone's invited.
And then if, you know, where I'm from, the township I'm from, you also get a bus or two, you know, because there are also lots of people who don't have their own cars and whatnot. So there's at least a convoy of about 20 cars.
It's a lot of people.
And they're all following the hearse. Right? You're all following the hearse because the hearse supposedly knows the grave number. So you're all going to follow it to the graveside.
Mm-hmm.
So when this hearse takes a detour, right, towards... Because this is in
Sandton, right? Yeah.
So as this hearse then takes this detour... Did all the cars
they must have
come
gone
on the detour? And then when the hearse stopped, and who made the call? Who made the call that says, let's take a detour to this church?
Here's what I think. Like, I think there weren't any other cars because there wasn't actually a funeral plan.
There we go.
I think this guy got in at his house or whatever, into the coffin. The hearse was prepped. They were going straight to the church for a show. There was no grave site. There was no... None of that stuff had been arranged because the guy was alive.
But they did arrange a crying auntie. You see the auntie that's crying
one
on the side.
And that was suspicious on its own because, as you say, there are always lots of crying family. Kind of one crying.
But also, from all the pictures, right, there's that white guy.
Yeah, standing there.
That one random one. Yes.
That's just amazed at all of this that's happening. And I want to know, guy... Do you come to this church all the time? Or was this just
what
your
led,
lucky day?
Yes.
Also,
to see the resurrection.
Or maybe he's the accountant, because I wondered. Because he's so he's so involved. Maybe he's counting his own money. He's just like, this better go well.
Yeah, this is our big money maker.
It's like,
there must be ROI on this.
And of course, there's a gap in the market now with Bushiri sort of out of the picture.
Yo, but
so
wait.
People are doing what they have to do. This is just upping the ante on the show. Really?
So
it's a show.
Really, I'm just trying to put some logic and thought into a situation that clearly doesn't have logic and thought. But if this is, let's as well give them the benefit of the doubt and sure it was real and was your amazing powers, Pastor Alf. If this wasn't real and they sat and they actually planned this, what was the outcome? Like, did they sit all in a room and say, okay, I'm going to... fake bringing someone back to life because it will show what?
So what?
It'll get them. Look at how much press coverage they've had, and gullible people will be going, oh my God, a resurrection? I've got to go to that church.
Couldn't
but so
they have
I also
made
wonder,
someone walk on water? Something
do you think
more
that,
believable?
That they prepped the people in the church? Because again, right, just from the perspective of just, I'm a black girl, I know how these things go down, right? I don't know any black person that ain't afraid of ghosts.
So, I'm surprised no one ran.
I'm wondering, that entire church and the overfill in the basement area. Here, a person with a coffin. Like, black people don't even like just, you know, open viewing of bodies. No. And, right? Now, here's this casket being brought in and now they're opening it up. People aren't looking around and going, what the hell? Right? Or what in heaven's name is going on here? Well, and then the guy wakes up. Not a single person runs,
screams,
faints. Do you know how much people faint in these churches?
Yeah.
I've seen like whole sections of the church fainting.
Yeah, these are very
not
emotionally vulnerable people. But this is the point. They trust that pastor.
Hey, Baba. Sure. This they is a dead
it.
Person coming back to life. We wanna, they,
I'd
at
be
some
out
point,
of there.
At some point, like your nature takes care of you and goes, hee, hold up. Well, what's going on here?
I mean, the whole
so
thing
did
is...
they prep everybody that this is, we're going to resurrect this guy? Because none of them seemed shocked or surprised or...
Maybe they're all actors.
That's so bizarre. And then they sat with him in the pews as he was
eating.
And then I saw the memes of everyone.
Resurrecting is hard work, yo. You need to, like... feed yourself.
The memes are, let's take a moment for this legend who actually has eaten his own food at a funeral.
So where did that food come from? Like, who thought, let's bring a plate for the guy that's going? Because, like, where did the food come from? Does this church, like, serve food to people? Where did this, like, random plate of, like, five colors on a Sunday come from? Like,
do you know how exhausting it is to be in the afterlife? You need some sustenance you come back.
I wish I had answers. I honestly don't know, but I think the whole thing's hilarious. I don't actually care about the answers to any of those questions. This whole thing is so clearly a fraud. And I feel bad for these terribly credulous people who go to this church every week and are basically being given a pantomime instead of some meaningful life coaching. They're getting a pantomime. They're getting a fast food of religion.
Okay, wait. On a serious note, they are also a very well-primed audience, because this is an entire audience of people who already believe that people can come back from the dead.
Yeah.
Because they have an entire book.
It's the basis of Christianity.
They have an entire book, which is like... based on, you know what I'm saying? Their guy
came back. Yeah.
So they're primed for it.
Right.
So it's not an improbability
to them
that this could happen. So you're already like, it's like magic, you know, you've got to believe, you've got to walk in there with the level of belief.
Sure.
So is it then really a big pantomime? Is it then so far-fetched that this guy who runs this church goes, hey, I already have like 3,000 people here who believe that people can come back from the dead. What if I showed them a person coming back from the dead? It's not so far-fetched.
Yeah. No, it's not a problem. But this guy's taking money from them. And, you know, if he put up, this is a great show and it's a pantomime and you can watch me pretend to raise someone from the dead, that's different to taking advantage of people's gullibility. I always have a problem with that. It would be like me telling Sia, you know, Sia, this month, the Lord Jesus has told me we don't have to pay you. And he goes, okay. It's just a little bit wrong in a number of ways.
I do get that, but also it's about what I believe and what these people believe. If you genuinely put your faith aside, but you don't even spare 2 seconds of thought to go, and you still go give your money.
People will drink petrol and they'll eat grass and they'll take a snake's poison. Like, Pumi, if it was just about belief, I'd say sure. But there are sometimes real world consequences for these people. We're not talking about people who have millions to spare. A lot of them are tithing 10% of everything they earn to this church.
Oh, yeah, that was never.
It'll come back, Gareth. Well, pressed down, folded over, shaken together, and overflowing.
Okay, but it's a tax on stupidity.
Don't sign me up there.
And I'm afraid it's a tax on stupidity, and I don't know that it's fair. These people are already beleaguered in so many ways by the predations of what it's like to live in a difficult place at a difficult time.
Yeah.
And now they also have to hand over money to watch an amateur. He's not even good at pretending, this pastor. And neither is the actor who's pretending to be dead. They're getting a low-quality show for a lot of money. And to them, it's a lot of money. And they're being led down the garden path. I just feel like it would be a waste of any of our Sundays to be there. But it's particularly cruel to do this to people who do believe. It's easy for us to mock it and make fun of it. But like, the real world consequence is a bunch of people left there on Sunday either frightened that they'd seen something unnatural take place, because that bothers you at some visceral level. Mm. Whether you've believed in Jesus for generations or not, doesn't matter. If you believe that reincarnation and resurrection can happen, it's irrelevant, because deep down something in you says, when it's over, it's over. That's why we cry at a funeral. And there's something just deeply deceitful about behaving like this with a credulous audience that's always bugged me. It would bug me the same way as if I had to lie to my audience here every day and I had to espouse a character or a personality that wasn't me. And I put on a show, it might have been entertaining, it might have made people feel better, but it would be dishonest. I just don't like it. There's something about it that grates me, that always has about religion. And I'm sorry for these people, but at the same time, I think we've got to just take it as entertainment. Like, if you can see through the bullshit, just treat it as entertainment. It's like going to watch Bohemian Rhapsody. Really, that's all it is. So enjoy the show. The last two stories, I don't know how you feel about this one. I'd love to hear your opinions. Government wants everyday plastic products like earbuds banned. Plastic straws are being phased out and replaced by paper ones. Parliament's Environmental Affairs Committee was on Wednesday giving a briefing on single-use plastic products.
I've not met a single person that likes those paper straws.
No.
Those paper straws are really...
not practical.
They're like the toenails of the devil.
Oh, what an image. And so I was gifted a copper straw.
Toenails of the devil.
No, I was not gifted those. I was gifted a copper straw and I've been...
You carried around with you?
And it's not cute or cool to... I know it's not a super... we shouldn't focus on the superficial when you're trying to save the world or whatever. Even as you're trying to maneuver this thing in your mouth and then it's hard and then somehow it hits your teeth and... No, just not working.
Know, hey, is the world worth living in if you can't have a proper like cocktail out of a proper straw?
I've read a bit about this and I've heard some opinions from people who know more than me.
About
straws in general, these single-use plastic things. You know what they said to me? If we had to stop using straws... everyone on earth had to stop using straws tomorrow, it would make absolutely zero difference to the environment. You know what it is? It's one of those things where government feel they can make a rule because it's easy to enforce. They can force a company, for example, that makes plastic straws to just stop making them, put that company out of business. And then they can pat themselves on the back and go, look what we've done. But you know that government don't care about the environment. If they did, they wouldn't be building more coal power plants.
It
that's doing
feels
way more
like
damage.
Fiddling while Rome is burning.
Thank you. You know, compared to all the methane that cows are letting off.
See ya.
Cows. Cows are the basis of our rural economy.
All those farting cows.
Right. You don't see government going, well, now we're going to definitely ban cows because it would cause pandemonium.
Yeah, because imagine not being able to braai your steak.
Imagine not being able to pay la bola. Imagine not being able to trade in a rural economy with cows as your primary source of wealth in communities. There's no way that government will ban cow farts, and cow farts are probably more of a problem than cars and car emissions.
They are.
So we're not going to deal with the problem. We'll just distract people by banning straws. I mean, this is typical of governments all over the world, the US government, every other government. They're all trying to fix the little things because it makes it look like they're achieving something. They're not achieving a damn thing. They're not changing the world. It's bullshit.
I actually saw a guy at the McDonald's take a handful of straws the other day. He was with this big guy in a McDonald's in Pretoria, in the middle of Pretoria. He was like, hey, look at this. They've got plastic straws here. And he took a handful of straws.
It's like the wonder probably in his eyes.
So these are very first world problems where we don't like paper straws and we don't like our copper straws. But I got to tell you something. Like, I have a smoothie every now and then, right, after gym.
Mm-hmm.
I hate those paper straws.
It's just can't not stand the same.
It would put me off having the smoothie that I like. That's how big a deal it is. So give me a goddamn plastic straw.
Dude.
I actually didn't realize this the other day. I had a smoothie as well while I was driving. And I had stopped drinking it for a while. And probably about 10 minutes later, I pick this cup up. I put it to my mouth. I'm trying to suck on it. And I just hear a little mushiness. I tried to pull the straw out. And the straw had now collapsed.
Yeah.
Because of all the moist...
Sorry.
Now I feel bad. Y'all with your smoothies. I feel bad about having to tell you about my daiquiri.
Oh. Go on.
Daiquiri is just not the same, darling. And so the paper straw.
Listen to this.
Smoothies.
Deputy Director... can you believe we actually pay for someone to do this? The Deputy Director General for Chemical Waste at the Department of Environmental Affairs. We pay someone called Mark Gordon to be the deputy. They need a deputy director general for chemical waste. There's a department for chemical waste. You're telling me we're not paying a bunch of people we don't need to be paying in government? I understand there's a proper job for someone
so
who's chemical
plastic
waste.
Plastic straws chemical waste?
There's a deputy director. Hold on. Forget about the straws. There's a guy with this job. my God, we need to cut government down to like a tenth of its size. There's someone, and the person's title isn't manager, chemical waste, which would be sufficient. He's a deputy director general.
Yes.
That's the level he's at. That means there's a director general, and that means there's a whole staff of chemical waste people.
In the government.
And they couldn't get the valve.
And have you seen our rivers? I've got a river that flows in front of my house. You want to talk about chemical waste? If you want to die, I'll dunk your head in my river for 0.5 seconds. You'll die. You will die. The stuff that's flowing down there. It stinks like something ungodly. It's like a dinosaur's ball sack.
Oh.
You have no idea of what's coming down that river.
The devil smells and there's and the a man, ball sack.
There's a man called Mark Gordon who sits in an actual office and we pay him a salary with our tax money called the Deputy Director General for Chemical Waste. We should call him. He says,
and find out.
Jobs won't be affected. Like your job? Mark Gordon? We look at these products, he says. What is the availability of an alternative? The cost of the alternative? The market readiness in terms of availability in South Africa? And we're quantifying every aspect of this. We don't want to unnecessarily introduce something we are going to skew markets with and put people out of work with. Gordon told the committee plastic litter in the oceans and beaches posing a threat to sea animals and nature generally is a problem. I'm horrified that there exists such a place as the Department of Chemical Waste, but you know, call me an anti-environmentalist for all you like. And then there's another one of these guys. What is it with these rich people listen to me, I can't even speak properly. What is it with
you're
these
so incensed these by the rich deputy people, director general.
These rich people who are murdering their wives. Like Rhoda got, Jason Rhoda got sentenced yesterday. Yes. How many years did he get?
They said, the use of the word effective, I don't understand, but they said effective 20 years.
Okay.
But there were reports varying between 18 and 20 years.
So another Constantia businessman, a guy called Rob Packham, is not going to be allowed to appeal a decision to revoke bail. He's accused of killing his wife, Jill Packham. What is it with these guys? They can't just get divorced. Why do they have to kill their wives?
Because then they have to share their money.
Well, then they should go to jail. So this guy, apparently, has been in custody since December after he breached conditions for his bail for a second time. His lawyer on Tuesday asked the court to give his client another chance, but this has been denied. So he will remain in custody for the duration of his trial, set to start in March. It's just crazy, right? He was first taken into custody shortly after his wife's body was found in the boot of her burnt-out car in Diepkloof.
Imagine.
In September, he appeared in court for breaching bail conditions. He was warned to refrain from doing so. However, he again reached out to a friend to try and contact his mistress, who is a state witness, who was back behind bars in December after his 75,000 rand bail was revoked and paid back. Joe! What is with these people? I've got to get into the heads of all these rich white guys who are killing their wives.
Although, in South Africa, there's generally a war against women.
Do you think so?
The number of times we have, and it's across the gamut. So it's across race.
But it's not, these are not strangers who are going around murdering women. Mm.
Yeah,
these are the
but
husbands.
Femicide yeah. is one of the highest
in the
forms
world.
Of in South Africa. And what I'm saying is it's not just rich white guys. It's across the spectrum. Mm-hmm. It's some guy in a squatter camp somewhere, you know, kills his wife and
but
puts her under
thing.
The bed.
For those women, the scariest thing is that it's their husbands and their boyfriends who are doing it.
Mm.
These are not unknown, random, opportunist murderers who
supposedly somebody that loves them.
These twisted scenarios.
You want to hear the judge sentencing Rhoda? These things always make me happy when I hear someone's going to jail for things like this. Here
brutal
it is.
Brutal and shocking. Susan died a painful and gruesome death.
By the way, this is the judge, Gayat Sali Hlope, who says that Susan Rhoda's murder was brutal.
She did not die instantly. It took her a while to die. She suffered in the last moments of her life, eventually succumbing to her death. The degree of violence which you had meted out at your wife was egregious. It was excessive and exhibits horrifying aggression. You executed successive blows and fatal force in the taking of her life and completely disregarded her bodily integrity. It is a significant feature of this crime that you did not hesitate in the commission thereof, for you did not call for medical assistance. Instead, you left her to die and you waited for her to die.
You know, we all got upset when Oscar shot Reva. I don't see the same level of outrage about this one. And this was a guy who premeditated and then put his wife through precisely this kind of murder that the judge is outlining here that was brutal. I mean, Oscar shot through a door hoping that he wouldn't hit her. He did. You know, whether that's premeditated murder or not in the same degree, I don't know. But this guy actually hanged his wife. Jesus.
Yeah, but you know, the outrage is... I'm sure if you ask people that know this guy, that know this girl, the outrage is... But the thing about Oscar and the so-called like famous people is we feel like they're in our lives. We feel like they're in our lives. Mm-hmm. And these people, not only are they in our lives, but they have made us love them. They have made us like care about who they are and what they stand for. And so we feel personally kind of slighted by things like this.
I've always believed that there's some sort of psychology that can tell us more about a person based on how they commit these murders. If you see someone suffering as they're struggling for breath.
See, you're obviously not watching enough of those documentaries on Netflix.
But I mean, I think, you know, that speaks to either how you are made up or how much you hated that person or how much you just wanted to see them suffer. You're twisted, Jason.
There's a whole channel.
He's
called
very
Crime
twisted.
And Investigation that's all about that.
Look, you don't have to tell me that, because also I don't mean to sound insensitive or like I'm taking the piss out of these circumstances, but these people are rookies at committing murders.
Yeah, you see those shows, you realize there are some serious professionals.
They don't watch CSI.
Yeah, what?
But
I mean,
here's the thing, right? This guy was at the Speer Wine Estate and he decided, okay, this is a good place for me to put this woman in her casket now. I'm going to hang her here. And then he did it and he thought, I'm going to get away with this. I'm going to tell them that she hanged herself.
Rookie.
It's just unreal.
I mean, really, as insensitive.
I'm horrified. I don't know these people, but I'm horrified. And then you hear about this latest one with the Packhams. You're like, really? Can we please stop this? Whatever happened to just separating amicably? How bad is your marriage that you have to kill your wife? How bad is your ability to communicate what's going on between the two of you that the only option left to you is to kill her? It's horrifying. It really is horrifying. And I think Pumi's onto something here, that we have a problem in this country when it comes to the way that men in relationships behave when things get out of control with their respective feelings towards their different women.
Yeah, and it's possibly... I think the problem is our justice system. Like, there's not... People think they can get away with it. And they do.
Well, I mean...
So that's not a deterrent.
You're absolutely right. People do. They feel they can get away with a lot in this country. Look at the levels of all kinds of crimes.
So it's not a deterrent.
Yeah.
It's really... And I think that the economic disparity between men and women as well is a big factor. It's a very big factor. Like, people, a lot of women feel they have to stay in terrible situations because they have no...
I think we got to dig even deeper and go into why it is that men behave this way, because there's some psychological component of this that we're not addressing. Like, the justice system comes at the end.
The level of ownership that they feel over women, the level of entitlement that they feel over women, it's
very ugly.
It's crazy.
Very ugly. All right, let's get to Sed by Sia this morning. Hopefully he's got something to cheer us up after that and before we get into the burning platform. So, Sia, tell us what's on your mind this morning.
Something to make us feel a little better. Especially if we're talking about the environment and looking and judging and side-eyeing plastic straws. Let's call this morning's story, Thank You China, because making drinking water safe to consume is actually really, as we know, really complicated than one might imagine. And destroying bacteria in any water source can be, for lack of a better term, challenging. But now, Thank You China, researchers in China have come up with a new method of eliminating bacteria in drinking water that uses a special material and also a bit of sunlight to disinfect large quantities of water in, as well, a relatively short period of time.
Okay.
Right?
Gareth needs that for his river.
I mean, I do. I'm going to put those nets up.
So this is all from the Science Alert. They report that researchers in China are utilizing sheets of a material called graphitic carbon nitride, which, when struck by ultraviolet light, creates molecules called reactive oxygen species, or ROS for short. So ROS are efficient at killing bacteria, and scientists demonstrated that enough of them are produced by the material to sterilize, this is what I really found amazing, over 2.5 gallons of water in about 1 hour. So the team that has been testing and working on this has tested the method by purifying infected water. And at the 30-minute mark, they've found an over 90% of the bacteria, including E. coli, has been eliminated. You go, China. You go. You work hard. You do what you do. You tell us how we can benefit from it.
Yeah, well, this is an interesting point, because someone messaged us now and said, why do we bother when China is responsible for the majority of the plastic in the world? I agree, Gareth and Pumi. I literally now choose my post-gym smoothie based on who has real straws. 80% of our plastic in the oceans are left from discarded fishing nets. So F these people who are so stupid.
Interesting. So they say that this new strategy is much more environmentally friendly than some other popular water treatments. And because this actually has less waste and less possibility of contamination of heavy metals. So Dan Wang, don't laugh at his name. Dan Wang is the senior author and senior researcher in this team.
As we may all be praying to Dan Wang one day.
We'll be thanking him. He says, the future application of this disinfection technology can significantly relieve clean water scarcity and global energy shortage. And global energy shortage. So Wang and his colleagues believe that their system could be used in conjunction with other water purification processes that perform other duties, such as filtering for metals and leveling the pH levels, but ultimately making clean drinking water with less waste. So to Dan Wang and his team, whatever you're doing with the ROS and Science Alerts in China.
And what carbon nanotubes?
Ah, that's one. Just do it. Tell us what we can do.
Good
stuff. You look at the fact that they're testing with 2.5 gallons of water in about an hour, and the changes that they're making there.
So what's a gallon?
A gallon of water.
In liters.
Oh.
1.6 liters. I don't know what a gallon is.
You don't?
Do you know what a gallon is?
Uh-uh. 1 gallon equals 3.7.
Oh, okay.
While a totally U.S. wrong. Gallon equals 3.785. For 1 liter.
Do you think a Chinese gallon is shorter?
Probably.
I see what you did.
Just before we get to the burning platform, here are a couple of other comments on straws. Emma in Cape Town says, morning, I have a solution for you about the paper straws. My girlfriend is the COO of a food manufacturing company in Joburg. They're making pasta straws. How cool is that? Huh? Peace and love from Emma. That's interesting. Morning. Here's some more comments. I once sat down at a food lovers market coffee shop and ordered a toasted sandwich and a Coke, so my order came and a paper straw was included. I don't usually use a straw, but I thought, meh, let me try this new paper straw. So I cracked the can open, unwrapped the straw, and stuck it in. The Coke wasn't cold enough, so there was a fizzing reaction from the paper and the Coke, and half a can of Coke fizzled out all over me.
Oh, no.
That's terrible. I didn't know it reacted. So, paper straw, no thank you. And someone says, Jason Roder, he has 5 years for covering up the murder and 18 years for the murder. 3 of the 5 years will run concurrently, so that that gives you 20 years.
Oh, that's the effect of.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
thank you very much. Stop being a baby and drink straight from the glass. Says someone else.
Boom!
Yeah. Women in general on this planet will be seen as second-class citizens by males. Look at the laws for women's bodies made by men. If a woman gets in a man's way, it's no worries. Get rid of what is obstructing his selfish will, says somebody else. And a thought on murdering your partner. I've been divorced for 13 years and I got screwed horribly financially. If I'd killed him, I would be out of jail by now and have all the money. Joking, of course, they should never get out of jail.
Women do actually come out of divorces almost 100% of the time. I think the statistic is like ridiculous, like 95% of the time. Women come out worse off.
Oh,
especially
really?
Women with children come out worse off than men.
Women with children who come out worse off than men financially will be the primary.
And in fact, that is why, because you become the primary guardian of the children.
Yeah.
So your earning potential is less because you have to look after the kids. You have to do all sorts of the kids related stuff. And because you have no help, already the statistic around women and the work women do that is unpaid work. So what unpaid work is things like cooking, cleaning, all of that kind of stuff is unpaid work.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of unpaid work that women do as compared to men is significantly higher. I think it's like 40% higher. So when you have children and you're the primary caregiver, you have so much more time that you spend doing unpaid work without any help, assistance of a partner, for the kids in particular. But also, you have less time to do paid work.
And of course, in this country, most people don't pay maintenance.
Hey!
Most of the men that are meant to pay maintenance don't.
And right there, the devil's toenails.
That's a horrible thought, the devil's toenails.
That's what they are. People don't pay maintenance. People don't want to pay maintenance.
I got you.
That shit, y'all.
All right.
Triggering me.
The burning platform is next. Well, you could be triggered in the burning platform. That's what we're hoping for. It's all coming up. So your dose of weekly current affairs. And this morning we will be joined not only by Pumi, but we're also going to be speaking to Stevens Mokgalapa from the DA about he's the new executive mayor of the city of Tshwane. So we're going to find out all about what he's up to.
This is CliffCentral.com.